Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. On our trip to Britain last summer, one of the places on our British bucket list was the Peak District National Park, located smack dab in the center of England. It's a walkers and day hikers paradise. If you've ever been to the Peak District of England, or if you've looked it up on the web, right now you're probably imagining tall, windswept hills coated in vibrant green. Small farms divided into large patchwork quilt-type squares by ancient stacked stone walls, complete with sheep dotting the hillsides everywhere. It's one of the few places I've been that looks just as glorious in person as it does in the travel catalogs. You look out at the amazing view and periodically have the urge to do that sound and music thing where you twirl around and sing, "The hills are alive." But we won't do that to you. Don't fear. On our UK trip, we made sure that the farm stays were a constant filter for our Airbnb list of preferred lodging types. And on the southern edge of the Peak District National Park, near a village called Ipstones, we found one that we thought might fit. Clockwork Cottage B&B sits on a high hillside on one of those patchwork squares. It's a lovely farmhouse with gracious hosts, a beautiful house, comfy beds, and scrumptious food. I just can't recommend this little farmhouse stay with enough superlatives. In addition to your stay, and your hike, and everything else, if you have a hankering for a full farm breakfast or a hot dinner after your stroll, your lovely hosts are pretty good at that part too. But for Rick and I, the icing on the cake was waking up and looking out the kitchen window in the morning, where happily grazing on green pastures was a little herd of Dexter cattle. March is the month of St. Patrick's Day, so we thought Dexters were fitting. And just like the Irish holiday has spread around the globe, these little cattle started in Ireland, but they moved about, and they're found in other places now. Places like the Peak District, in the middle of England. The cattle are Irish, yes, but in my mind, they'll always be pictured first on the lush green fields of a man named Stephen Adcock at Clockwork Cottage B&B. And here he is. Hi. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Stephen Adcock. Yeah.
Okay. Now, Stephen, we are here at this glorious Clockwork Cottage B&B that you have here. And we tell us a little bit about this area where we are.
We're in the Staffordshire Moorlands. The area is called the Churnet Valley. Luckily, not overly known about, as opposed to the other side of the road, which is the Peak District, but it is getting more and more. But yeah, very rural, very rural.
There's B&Bs and little farm stays everywhere up here, and it's absolutely delightful. The very thing that brings people here is the thing that might be endangered by this.
Yes.
Yeah, we look at this glorious farmland in back of us, yes, and this whole area, the Peak District, and we were up in Northumberland, and the Lake District, Cumbria, all of those areas, the Yorkshire Dales. It's just, they're just full of these little stone walls and farms where there might be, 10, 20 cattle commonly, or is that a lot? Maybe just sheep?
Mostly sheep when you get up into the Peak District. Yes, it's you get a little bit lower with the cattle. And the villagers, we have programmes, Yorkshire Vet and All Creatures Great and Small, and those sort of programmes in this country. And we ourselves go on holiday down to Devon and Cornwall, and you go through all the little villages. But because you live here, you tend to miss them. You're working or you're doing something, you've always got something. Very often I have to just stop and look around. We've got a view of probably best part of 100 miles to the south there. And you just take it for granted. And sometimes you just have to stop and lean on the fence and have a look around.
Well, I do not take it for granted, and I've been on quite a bit of farmland in the last 10 years, but this is
this is God's country, I guess it would be the be the same.
The Yorkshire people would disagree with you.
Really?
Call that God's own country. Yes.
Well, when I was younger, I read James Herriot, and again last year I read it again. James Herriot in the Yorkshire Dales, and talking about visiting these little farmlands. And the stories of coming out of vet school and speaking to many of the farmers that would tell him how to do his job as a vet, right?
Yes.
Because they've been farming for so long.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned that sheep was a very common thing, and yet good English beef is a common thing as well. We are on a place here where you raise Dexter cattle.
Yes, that's correct.
Tell me a little bit about the Dexters.
Yeah, we started with the Dexters in 1993. And as anybody that keeps them will tell you, this somehow or other they seem to get under your skin. They're not generally accepted in the wider farming world because of their inconsistency in size. The general one that people think of is what we'd call the short leg one, which is smaller. You do get the slightly longer leg variants, which most of these are here. And we ended up going down the beef. I used to do a lot of showing, but then probably about 15 years ago, we'd always done our own beef, but it was done by the butcher and put into boxes, and we sold it by the box. We got an opportunity to take over a farmer's market from somebody that was finishing, which my initial reaction was, it's not something I want to do. I've not been involved in that type of thing. But Sharon, my wife, was very interested. So we bought all their equipment, and we now do all our own cutting up. We get them slaughtered locally. And they come back to us for cutting up and processing, and we do two farmers markets a month. And it's the thing really you have to do with the Dexter. You have to find a way, an outlet yourself, because to take them into the normal cattle market, you don't really get the price. You don't even get the everyday cattle price. And so you do need to find your own outlets for them. And it's been very successful. Yeah.
Now, the farmers market seem to be, or what our version of a farmers market is, the local production where you can sell to the local consumers. That seems to be very common here. And yet, I know in the United States, we have USDA requirements. You have to take them to certain slaughter facilities. Do you have that same thing in England? Because you seem to have quite a few government programs that encourage local consumption and local farming.
Yeah, they still need to go to a recognised abattoir and everything. Yeah, there's still lots of red tape to follow, and Sharon's wife does it all. There's loads and loads of paperwork and temperatures and all sorts of things that have to be adhered to.
So now, tell me a little bit more about these cattle. What's the age of these? Are these aren't full grown?
No. These will vary between, probably the youngest will be 14 or 15 months old, and the oldest will be about 30 months old. Yeah.
Are they very typical Dexter? Because I know there's a difference between the Kerries and the Dexters a little bit, right?
Yes. I've not had a lot to do with Kerries, but the Kerries in general, the ones that I've seen, tend to be a little bit more dairified. The Dexter is a dual purpose animal, which means it should be good for both beef and milk. So neither excessive in beef qualities or dairy qualities. People have tended to get them a little bit more beefier to get the better return out of them. But we have found that the dairier they are, the sweeter the meat. And there is an old saying, nearer the bone, sweeter the meat, whether that's correct or not, I don't know. But we don't have any set age at which they go for slaughter. They're just on grass and they're ready when they're ready. At one time we were restricted for slaughtering under 30 months, but that has altered now slightly. So they just go on until they're ready. But you can see the different sizes. These two will be a similar age. But that's the difference in the two different types. Wow. Yeah.
Now, I just have to ask, these are very curious animals, but hands off or?
They're
I've
all different.
My hands, but
Yeah. If he's happy, they'll.
We're very sensitive to that because of all of the things that we've heard about quite a few different diseases that have run around. England took the brunt of particular thing.
Yes, yeah.
So now to go back to this, that I was reading just a teeny bit about it. This breed came, from my understanding, I want to say the Kerries started in Ireland in what, the 17?
Yes, Southern Ireland. I couldn't tell you the dates, but a long time ago. Yes, a long, long time ago. Yeah.
A long time to a Brit or a long time to an American? Because that's a different number. So it's my understanding there was a gentleman that raised Kerries, and it was, or as a farm manager, I think, and he had a certain kind that was, forgive me for saying this, a little stumpier.
Yeah. No,
shorter legs.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
like a big box more.
Yeah.
And they started calling the Dexter version
yes.
because that was the gentleman's
yes,
name.
Yeah.
Okay, and so it's very much like our version of the Devons in the States, where one went dairy and the other went beef. Is that kind of what happened with the Careys and the Dexters?
I think they've always been two distinctive breeds, although they've always had or initially had a very close association. And you're right, the gentleman's name was Mr. Dexter and he brought them over to England. And they've just gone on from there. And of course, they've split and the Dexters have become, when we first started in the early 90s, they were about, but they were still on the rare breeds list, still as an endangered species. But it wasn't long before they really took off and they now are off the list and are on their own society and run their own... Own side of it now. So, yeah.
So tell me about the characteristics. Obviously, we have this is a very friendly bunch. Are they all like this?
In general, I tend, because of dealing with them on my own most of the time, the cows need to be quiet. And usually, if the cows are quiet and the bulls quiet, your calves usually come the same way. The family temperament does tend to follow. If you get something that is a bit... highly strung, you usually end up with it in their offspring. And the thing is, I want these in once a month to select a couple out for going for the abattoir. So I want to be able to come out into the field with a bucket, shout them, follow me into the shed. You don't want any running around and stressing yourself and the cattle and everything else. So in general, yeah, they're pretty good. Yes. Yeah.
So you have what, 15-ish?
Yeah, there's 15 in here, and then there's the cows and calves are over on, and the bull are over on the bank on the other side. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you decide. Forgive me, guys, here. But yeah. When you decide who goes to the abattoir and who you keep, and when you do the culling process, as we would call it, is it yeah. called culling here as well?
We tend to call culling more of the older animals that have got to the end of the working life, if you like. They're more what you call the cull animals. These would be the clean animals that would go, and the cull animals still go into the beef process, but they go for processing for pies and burgers and stuff. Where these are the clean animals, which have neither calved or anything, and so these are the ones that are used for your general beef, for your roast joints and your steaks and things. Yeah.
So for your selection, what do you look for in a Dexter?
As in when it's ready for going, or in general,
the physical characteristics.
The characteristics, right? Basically, if you're looking basically on the short, which most of them are, you want a nice deep body, a good length of body, the head. These tend to have a bit too, in general for a Dexter, a bit too long a head, broader, a little bit shorter, nice and wide in the muzzle, a leg on each corner, which I know sounds silly, but they do want, sometimes the legs will be a bit tight in, etc. And a good depth, a good depth of body and a good length where you can get the sirloin steaks out of. I'm just trying to see. If you look at this one, is a little bit sharper in the shoulder, where these are broader. So that one's a little bit broader in the shoulder, a little bit better beefy type, where this one's a bit narrower. Even this taller one's a little bit narrower in the shoulder. So on the beef side, you want them that bit stronger. Yeah.
I just have to stop this and say thank you so much for training them to line
up so tidily next to each other
here on the fence. You couldn't get them any more straight line,
soldiers
here?
No, they're doing me proud.
Now, one thing, these are in front of us, they're just this glorious pitch black.
Yep.
Not terribly hairy, a little bit of hair inside the ears, but not a whole lot compared to, it's not like it's not like it's our... Belt of Galloway or anything
Yeah. They will get a lot longer coat during the winter. They will definitely get a lot longer coat. They're in probably the best sort of condition at the minute. This time of year, they've obviously lost their winter coat from last year. Mm. And they're in a nice sleek black. They also come in red, which is over the back there, and a dun. Which is more or less a diluted red. Yeah, there's the three colours.
And they have a high crest there. Are these naturally polled animals, or
no.
do you have to
dismud
them
as calves? Yes. I tend to dismud them at a couple of weeks old. Yeah, this one's polled. There is pollen in the Dexters. and this one's Podden, you can actually tell a little bit by the shape of its head. It's a little bit more what we would call poly, a little bit more rounded, where the others are a little bit flatter in the head that have been dismudded. Yeah, you can see the polled ones.
Very short muzzle on there. I mean, a very compact head.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that one. They are all, and people will say, how can you tell them apart? Well, I would say, how can you not tell them apart? But everyone is different in looks and in temperament and everything, yeah.
Definitely. Now, one of the things that Kerries are known for is that not just that inquisitive nature. We showed you some pictures yesterday of the Kerries that we visited on the East Coast in the U.S., but they're known for jumping fences as well. This is a shorter cow, so do you have that issue with this?
No, not in general, no. You'll get the odd one in the past that's been highly strung. And if forced into a situation, they would do it. But in general, no, they don't. You do need good fencing because they do like foraging in the hedge bottoms just as much as they do good quality grass. So they will push at the fences. So you do need good quality fencing to make sure you keep them in. Yeah.
Now, this area also is these gorgeous green fields, but there is a little bit of this additional non-grass.
Yes.
The sedges. Not sedges? Forages.
Nettles. The stinging nettles, yes.
Will they eat that as well?
They'll have a, if they like us, if they've got better stuff to go for, they will do. The Dexter has been known for being a real good forager, which they are, and that they will do well on poor ground. Well, personally, I don't believe that's necessarily so. They will thrive on poor ground, but there's a difference between doing well and thriving. So they like anything else. If they're on good quality stuff, then they will respond accordingly. But yeah, but they're quite happy hours. This is all permanent pasture. This was mown in May. We made a bit of hay on here in May. The other ground higher up, we did some haylage a few weeks ago, but it's all permanent pasture. All it has on is farmyard muck, which is the bedding muck. It doesn't have anything else. And it's not forced, and they're not forced. It's natural, basically, yeah. And if you go down onto the ground at the bottom, we've got some rough ground, and there's all sorts of plants and things, flowers, rare flowers and things all down there, which they are among all the time. Yeah, so they get a good selection of grazing.
Now, it's interesting that you said the farmyard muck, because we've seen quite a bit of the manure spreading going on.
Yes,
it's a glorious smell to me, but not to everybody. but this is something that in the U.S. we don't seem to do as much. We spread chemicals all over.
Yes, yes.
And fertilizers.
Yeah.
But the manure spreading seems to be very common here. Is that correct? Or is that just for the tourists you spread the manure?
No. I can assure you they won't be doing that. Slurry. Is it a tanker that you've seen?
No, it
is actual muck. Yeah.
Yep.
No, it is, because basically our cattle are in the winter, so they are bedded on straw, which obviously they get bedded once a week or depending on the weather. And then that is put in a heap. It's left to rot for a couple of years, and then it's spread on the fields. And the other thing is the slurry, which comes out of the dairy farms, which is more liquid, which is a little bit more potent, basically. You'll see them round about. I followed one this morning. The muck, and it's just a slow release, whereas your artificial stuff in general is put on to boost it quickly, ready for mowing. There is various ones that are longer lasting, but the muck is more of a long-term thing. Yeah, every year it gets put on. So, yeah.
Now I'm going to ask you the toad hole.
Is that
the name of the farm?
It's not the name of this farm, but the farm we were at last time when we started with was called Toad Hole Farm, but not toad as in the amphibian, toad as in iron, I believe. I don't know the full ins and outs of it, but it was something to do with iron or something that was in the ground. So it's not the toad as in.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
And so they always say you should never have your prefix of your herd, or they suggest that you don't have it to a farm, because if you do move, it's still linked. You do so, but we did, and we didn't. I suppose I was brought up farming, but I didn't go into farming at the time when I left school. It's not a big money making thing, it's more of a lifestyle. But we managed to buy a small little farm, a 6-acre place, I don't know, probably when we've been married about 10 years. And it's something that you just get back into. And then we got the chance to buy this bigger place, which is 50 acre. And things have just grown. We've been here 23 years. Never expected doing what we've done, but things have just done naturally. And sometimes I think that's the best way. And same with the meat business. It's just grown naturally. We don't advertise. We don't do anything. It's just all... We had a meeting here a few years ago from a local farmers group, and they had burgers and bits and pieces at night. And one of the questions I got asked was, what budget did you put forward when you were setting it up? What was your business plan? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, there wasn't one. Well, why wasn't there? I said, because we just did it. We just got on with it, doing other things at the same time. And it's just grown from there. No. Preconceived idea of we've got to make this much a month or a year, etc., etc. We were lucky because we both worked, so you've got an income coming in, and this could just slowly. It's not something on this scale that you would make a living out of, but it's nice. We can keep the cattle, and it pays for the farm and everything else. But we still need to go to work to keep an income coming in, and still do, like you say, the Airbnb as well. A bit from everywhere.
Organically is the best way to grow. It's just natural thing. But tell me what you do in your other life.
I'm a joiner.
You're a joiner. Yes, our version of a carpenter.
Yes, carpenter joiner. Yes.
And your wife.
Sharon, basically, she was trained catering, cooking and baking.
Yeah, I can tell because we've had quite a dinner and quite a breakfast here at the cottage.
But she also, at the moment, for a good few years, she was in a nursery doing the cooking for all the children. But now she works down at Alton Towers a couple of days a week, mainly to get her away, get her out a bit and see different people. So yes.
So it's typical of US farmers. Is that typical of English farmers as well? You have a job and then you farm on your second job, kind of.
It is generally of the people that I have dealings with, yes. In this area, there is some big farms that are milking, 300 or 400 cows. Not so far away, there's a herd milking Ayrshires with a robotic system. And so there is big professional farms, if you like, locally, but more and more of them now are people working and just keeping a few animals as an interest as well.
And this is such a so very English countryside type experience. The B&B thing is what people come far and wide for, right? So that's there is, I'm sure you're, from my understanding, is you're booked quite a bit here.
Yes. We kept busy. Yes, definitely.
And that's all summer or all winter too?
We've started it just before COVID, so it's only something that we've recently come into. And last year was very, very busy, more or less booked up all year. This year's a little bit slower, but we keep busy. There's not many nights when it's empty. Yeah, we're lucky, as I mentioned earlier on, we've got Alton Towers theme park not too far away. It's only probably 10 minutes away. So a lot of our people are going to Alton Towers. So they come for a night or two nights. They've come from another part of the country. It means they can go down there 10 minutes, come back, and then go home the next day. So, yeah.
Now, that's it's a really interesting thing to me because I would think it's tourism from other parts of the country, but quite a few people in Britain take holiday. You have a nice holiday period that you get every year.
As
the norm here. So people often come to these areas to go walking and hiking get away. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Yes. Yeah. There's, as I say, over the Peak District starts about 4 miles away. There's big, like, millstones with Peak District written on them, and they're on the side of the road, and the nearest one is probably just 3 or 4 miles away. And yes, there's a lot of walks all in the Peak District.
They have sheep all about, and how we might take pictures of bison in the national parks. Yeah. They have people taking pictures of sheep. I was one of those because I was trying to figure out which breeds were which.
Right. Yeah.
There's quite a bit of with the sheep. I know you're a cattle man.
Yeah.
But the sheep are something that is ubiquitous across the country. And I'm in trying to identify breeds. This is a little microcosm of selective breeding for purpose here.
Yeah.
Because you eat mutton. Now we don't commonly eat mutton,
and I
know that your wool trade has gone down quite a bit.
Yes.
So you see all of these different breeds of sheep, and you'd think, okay, is that a Scottish Blackface? Is that a Cheviot? And some of them seem to be these combinations. I know they call them mules.
Yeah.
It's for a very specific purpose.
Yeah.
So identifying them is difficult sometimes
yes.
because it's it's been going on for so long that I want that animal for that thing that all these individuals' farms have something different, maybe like your cattle, right?
Yeah.
I want this in my Dexter, and this is what I get. I'm in an area that might have more gnats, and so I want more hair in the ears, right? Is that what it comes down to?
Well, And the thing with the sheep, they've got the hardy mule females, and they will put them to a terminal sire, and then they'll have lambs that'll probably go that year as lambs, or somebody else will buy them on better ground and they'll go next year as yearlings.
We associate mules with something that can't procreate, not the same thing.
I don't know the cross, but there is a definite cross that he uses, and there's a gentleman just down the road. He goes up into Yorkshire every year and probably buys 30 or 40 ewe lambs and they've got a speckled face.
Yes.
Yeah, and it is on the right-hand side. They were on the roadside the other day. It had some come in. So, yes, yeah. And like you say, most of those are bred in Yorkshire. And there will be a farm specifically breeding those to go to the sales for people like him to buy. Yeah, and then he puts them to a terminal sire for meat lambs, yeah.
Yeah, and you're more productive here, it seems, in some ways, because the high country has the mules that might be tolerant of those conditions, and they'd get 3 or 4 lamb crops out of them. And then when they get a little bit older, they bring them down to the low country and they'll get another 3 or 4 years out of them.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because then it's an animal that's a little older, can't tolerate the, like some of us that are getting older.
Well, they start losing the teeth.
I haven't lost the teeth yet, but the rest of it, the brain and the feet are going.
No, that's right. They'll probably up in there. Well, you've probably seen the programs where, again, I've not had a lot to do with sheep, but where they'll bring them in, they'll dip them, make sure, check the udders, etc., turn them away with a tup for the winter, and then they'll come back in, they'll lamb them all, then they'll check all the lambs, tail them, castrate, and off they'll go again, and just check them, and then come in when the lambs are ready for going. So, And on hundreds and hundreds of acres, some of these, thousands, and the sheep just roam.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. Now, my niece said to me, I don't see any livestock guardian dogs up here. But what predators do you have up here? Really, very few, I think.
We've only got foxes, and yes, they'll probably take an odd sickly lamb and things, and with a buzzards about and kites. But in general, I think there's nothing. Probably as much as you've got in there.
Bears, no wolves,
no
coyotes are not in existence here.
No.
So you can let your livestock hit through the hills and then bring them in at the end of the day.
No, there's nothing much further. The nearest bears have just turned up. There's a place called Pete Wildlife Park, which is literally just over the bank. And it used to be called Blackbrook Bird World, and they had a lot of various ducks and things, but somebody else has taken over and it's more like a little zoo, and it's gradually growing and growing. And recently they've had some polar bears. Yeah, just literally over the banks. Hopefully they'll stop in.
Humans are very odd creatures, are we not? Now, one thing that people do when they collect their animals and they bring them back in is to take them to shows. Tell me a little bit. We've been hoping to hit an agricultural show, because August, I believe, July, August is the time when all of these little villages, and when I say villages, I mean like wait for the other party to come to cross the bridge before you cross, because there's just not enough room. These are tiny villages. They all seem to have their own little livestock shows. Tell me what happens there.
The various sizes, it's our local Ipstones Village show this coming weekend. It's on the school playing fields. There'll be classes for cattle, sheep. I believe they'll probably have a small dog show of some description. Bit of horse jumping, show jumping, flowers, all sorts of produce, even cakes and bread and things like that. Yeah, and then there'll be various entertainments around the side. Also, and food stalls, and that's just on a small scale. But then you'll get the bigger shows like the Great Yorkshire, which go on for 3 or 4 days, and they are massive. And there's a lot. On the smaller shows, you might get your local agricultural merchant advertising and your local tractor people there with a stand. But that's all. But at the bigger shows, there'll be,
John Deere comes in and Land Rover.
That's their main sort of advertising times, yeah.
But the smaller village, it seems to be very much the smaller shows are almost like the evening at the pub, where people people bring their children and their dogs.
Yeah.
And they talk about their events in their life. And because everybody can relate to that in an ag show. Somebody's got a cow, somebody's got a sheep, somebody's got a dog or a child, right?
Yeah.
And everybody eats.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they definitely are a social gathering without a doubt.
That's the one that appeals to me.
Yes.
So I'm hoping that things work out that we can visit this one here. But if people want to come to these shows, is the public welcome to all of these?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yes. Yeah. There's usually a small charge to get in, but there's car parking and everything. And you'll also have a section where they'll have vintage cars, vintage tractors, classic cars. So, yeah, there's a bit of something for everybody. Yeah, it's quite easy to spend a day at the smaller shows. Yeah, definitely. An ice cream van, that's the main thing.
I know you have a regular job that you have to go to here. But I am going to ask, with the advent of tourism and so many people coming into these beautiful, beautiful green areas, I would assume, we were at the Peak District Park yesterday and it reminded me of Yellowstone and Yosemite in the States, which are huge areas where thousands and thousands of people come in. And that's delightful because it reiterates to people how important it is to preserve these places.
Yes,
but at the same time, it destroys it in a way as well. I have, there's paths and little people letting their children run after the sheep, and they're running into the, scaring the sheep and litter and things like that.
Yeah.
And I look at many of the places that we've been to here. If you have tourists coming in, people from outside, whether that be city people from Britain or big Americans or anyone from Europe or other places, what are the things that you would ask that people do in places like this, collect your trash, be respectful
you took the words out of me. I think that was what I was just going to say, just be respectful of the area and what it is, basically. And I think that's all you can do. I think that my own opinion is with the country in general has probably lost touch with the countryside for whatever reason, and don't realise that, cattle need fences and sheep, they need gates, they need things to keep them in, and a lot of people go walking and leave gates open and things like that. But it is just being respectful. I think that's the main thing that you can ask, and your rubbish. But it all comes under that same banner. And we do, you're right, I think this area would be poorer without tourists coming in. Well, it was quite obvious, actually, during COVID when Alton Towers was closed. Well, everything was closed, obviously, wasn't it? And it was nice and it was peaceful, but it was very, very strange. And even to the point now, you can hear an aeroplane.
I was just going to ask you about that. And we've only heard two since we've been out here.
And it was really strange. You don't realise that they're there. We're not that far as the plane flies from Manchester Airport or East Midlands Airport, but there was no planes. And it was really strange. One's just got over it only because I was thinking about it. But it was nice, but very, very. On the first weekend that we were closed up with COVID, we got closed up here on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. We'd got an animal in ready to go to the market on the Sunday. And obviously we couldn't go. But one of our customers rang and said, what are we going to do about the meat? We've got a really good customer base. And what are you going to do about the meat? And we said, well, we don't know. It'll end up going in the freezer. And he said, look, it's your business. But he said, why don't you ring round your customers and get the orders? They pay for them online or they put the money in an envelope. You go with your van, have it all boxed up. Everybody's labels on the bags, just have your van open and let them come and collect it. And you could legally do that because it was food. We printed off from the NFU, which is National Farmers Union in this country, a sheet which gave us that permission to be able to go. And we did that all summer. And we sold just as much meat going there within that hour. There was a lot more preparation work. But what I was getting at was that first Sunday morning. We usually go to the market about 6 o'clock on a Sunday, but we arranged to meet people between 10 and 11. And it was so strange that morning. We never saw another vehicle going all the way to Manchester, about an hour and a quarter's trip. And it was just like you were watching a film where there was a meteorite coming in everybody's bit. It was really, really eerie. I'll never forget that.
Surreal.
Never forget. Yes, yeah. But so what I was getting at with that was, it just shows how we do need, the countryside does need the people, without a doubt. And around about there's a lot of B&Bs and Airbnbs and small hotels and things. And yeah, it all just fits in nicely. This area at the moment isn't overdone with tourists. I think that's the best way of putting it. So at the moment we've got a nice balance. But of course the best thing or the worst thing, depending on your point of view, is once an area gets well promoted because it's nice and it's peaceful, or somebody picks a picture of this is the best beach, quietest beach in the country, all of a sudden it gets spoilt in some people's views because you get everybody there. So yeah
here there's a feeling of stillness, which is, yes, something we miss in our,
yes,
lives these,
yeah,
days.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just yeah, there's nothing now, isn't there?
So if people want to come visit you, Clockwork Cottage.
Yes.
And Ipstones, is that what it's called?
Yes, Ipstones.
In Ipstones. Clockwork,
yes,
Cottage in Ipstones. And you, yep, also sell Dexter beef.
Yep.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, yeah. some people ask, how can you do it? Well, I think as we were talking yesterday, there's a twofold answer to that. I've been brought up with it, and if we didn't do it, they wouldn't be here. So they have a good life, as you,
yep,
can see. And,
yep,
yeah.
Yes,
and
they definitely do.
Yeah, yeah.
So we found you on Airbnb. That's,
yep,
how we found you.
Yep.
Your wife also does a delightful dinner upon request and a delightful, yep, we had beef stroganoff last night,
yep,
and an English breakfast that I don't think I could work very long if I had that every morning. That was eggs and beans and tomatoes and
bacon sausage,
yeah, toast, everything. It was, but it's good at least once while we're here to have an English breakfast.
Yeah.
So it was an absolutely delightful stay, and this would be a perfect place for families as well if they wanted,
yes,
couples,
yeah,
or families, because there's definitely a feeling of stillness.
Yes, yes, yeah. Wonderful. Peaceful. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you
speaking
very much.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening.
We'd like to thank Stephen for joining us today. If you'd like to find out more about the farm stay or the Dexter cattle that he raises, please visit them at Clockwork Cottage on social media. It's well worth the visit. We'll see you next time with another adventure. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes of our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2024.